You're listening to Getting It Wrong to Get It Right. Are you struggling to grow your business? Book a free business growth consultation with Joe today.
Joseph McGuire, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well indeed, Joe. Thanks so much for the invitation. Delighted to be here.
So tell me this, Joseph. For people that don't know you, you would specialize in an ancient art, Chinese ancient art of face reading, and you also would help companies with their negotiation skills as well. So they're intertwined with each other. Tell me, if someone says to you, what is negotiation? What would your answer be?
In simple terms, it's a conversation. People make it into a big drama that it's something massive in some cases. And even when people are highly experienced at negotiating at a very high level, some people make it into this massive drama. They get really anxious before it. They get really anxious during it, and they feel exhausted afterwards. But really, no matter where you're coming from, it's a conversation. And whether it's a conversation with one person or two groups of people, it's still a conversation. You just need to be very clear about why you're there, what your outcome, your desired outcome is. You need to be very clear about who they are and where they're coming from, which is really where I come in. And once you're very clear about where you're coming from, where they're coming from, then you can have a real conversation. Very simple.
Yeah. You know, as I go through life and understand the whole dynamics of the business world and, you know, being in it for over three decades, it fundamentally comes down to communication. Yeah. It comes down to language. And it also comes down to influence, which, if you look at it, is trust. And a lot of people, when you are right, when they think of negotiation, they look beyond people having those conversations. They look at TV, like Dragon's Den, or they look at other shows, which is, you know, courtroom battle of negotiation. And it's not. It's actually just going, okay, we are meeting somewhere in the middle, and both parties have to walk away feeling that they haven't been ripped off.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are real life cases where people are there to battle, and people are there to, you know, to be very aggressive and stroppy. And like one of my favorite stories is a real life story. I had a conversation with one of my contacts in the US last year, and he told me a story from his life where he was negotiating on behalf of somebody else. It was in a building in Beverly Hills. It was the other company's boardroom. He walked in. He was greeted by, there were 13 people around the table. There was the CEO, and the CEO was standing at the table. And he was a big, big, solid man, like a brick outhouse, as we would say. And the greeting was, I don't effing like you. I don't effing like anything about you. I don't know what the F you're doing here. Why don't you F off? There was no hello. That was the greeting. And there are people out there like that. Now, when I heard the story, I just started laughing because I just thought it was so funny, because it tells you when people behave like that, their position is actually weak.
Yeah, and it's very disrespectful. And it's also, yeah, it's shown the character of the person as well, you know, and that brings up two questions. One is people are testing. And the second one is lack. And when I say lack, I mean they lack the skills to actually negotiate or sell or have that communication. So explain to me, what are the processes or the steps that one should look at when a person goes into negotiating?
Well, the first thing, the old Benjamin Franklin quote, fail to prepare, prepare to fail. So you need to know what your position is. You need to know who you are. And a lot of people don't know who they are. They have this image that they've created, the persona that they've created, but they don't have real rock solid confidence in who they are. They're not absolutely clear about their own values. So automatically, when you're in that place, you're kind of on thin ice. So you need to have that prep done. You need to know what your desired outcome is. You need to know what you can afford to lose if necessary, what you're willing to concede beyond what's, not just in terms of what's directly on the table, but beyond what's off the table, because there's always an unknown factor in a negotiation. Then you need to do your research about the people across the table from your counterparts. And I prefer to use the term counterpart rather than competitor, because to me, a negotiation is almost like a martial art where you're moving around each other. There's a dynamic there. So you need to know you need to know their position. You need to do your research into what it is they're looking for, what their real desired outcome is, what their actual position is. And that does take time. It takes a lot of work. But then you need to know who the personalities are you're dealing with, what their stress triggers are, their behavior style, how they communicate, how best to communicate with them so you get past their, if you like, their defenses. And we all have defenses. So you need to have a lot of research done to do it properly. And when you have that research done, and when you're prepared inside as well as outside, you can go into a negotiation in a very calm, relaxed, confident, and alert space where you can create something. And you need to be willing and able to improvise. You know, there's an old quote that, what was it, Norman Schwarzkopf, the American, the US commander in the Desert Storm, or something along the lines of, you need to prepare diligently for a battle, but once a battle starts, all plans go out the window.
Yeah.
Well, so you need to be able to improvise.
You need to. And I was doing a talk there the other week, and I was talking about awareness, and I was saying that, you know, you'd be surprised that, you know, 99% of people believe that they're self-aware, but in fact, it's probably less than 20% that are. And some, which when you said to me about a person's stress levels, and then which triggered for me was their ego as well. So in the negotiation, how do you observe or learn to observe what those persons' stress levels are, or when their ego is jumping in as well?
Well, you need to practice these skills, observation and listening. You need to practice those skills diligently anyway, long before you go into negotiation. So you need to be practiced. And then there's very obvious things that you can observe during a negotiation. For example, pay attention to somebody's blink rate. So if somebody's blink rate suddenly starts to speed up, it tells you they're in stress. If somebody's rhythm of voice changes, if it speeds up, or suddenly slows down, it tells you you've hit a hot spot. If the pitch of the voice goes up, they suddenly start speaking faster, they suddenly start slightly higher voice, any of those things are obvious signs that they're under stress. If they move around a lot, it could just be that the room is hot. It could be that they're wearing clothes that are just uncomfortable. So you can't entirely base it on like body language and movement. But you have to pay attention to a combination of the visible cues, the changes, the auditory changes. And then there's the other underlying one, which is your basic, what you want to call it, your gut feeling, intuition. What's the vibe you get from them? But again, so many people are not tuned into that. We all have the ability, but we second guess ourselves and we get in our own way.
Yeah, it's, you know, we allow the subconscious mind to sort of just navigate as it through. So we're listening, but we're not active listening.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a heightened awareness when you're actually talking to that other person and you're actually looking out for these as well. So that, you're right, that comes with practice. What about the ums and the ahs that someone may speak about, or they may develop when they're in a conversation? Like it was George Soros' son was doing a talk in the World Economic Forum about something. And, you know, for a man that has billions behind him, like he was actually talking garbage. There was no start. There was no finish. There was ums and ahs back and through it. What does that say about a person?
Yeah, to me, that's quite entertaining. Very, very informative. When I watch, like, the fact that somebody is supposedly hugely successful, you know, financial material level, doesn't mean they're successful as a person. It doesn't mean they're self-aware. It doesn't mean they have a real understanding of either themselves or people. It doesn't mean they have any kind of good social skills, any great ability to communicate. So as and of themselves, as individuals, they're not hugely impressive. But we get caught up, or many of us get caught up in the aura. This person is successful, as George Soros' son, so he must be special. And people get blinded by that. In so many cases, it's the emperor's new clothes.
Yeah, well, I'm just using that interview as an example.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're sitting down in a boardroom and that other person then is presenting their self, I would look at it as, one is they don't know what you're talking about. Two, they've lack of self-confidence as well. is that a case that you kind of go, okay, I need to walk away from this as well? And that's the gut feeling, which you spoke about.
But there's always that element of it depends, and you have to look at the situation on its merits. Why are you in that specific boardroom in that situation for that negotiation at the time? Like, what's your outcome? What's your desired outcome? Is it of real value to you? And what can you, like, what do you really hope to gain from it? What research have you done that justifies you being there in the first place?
You make a very valid point, because a lot of people will go into a situation or they'll go into a conversation with no real focus or clarity on the outcome that they want. They may have built up that they want to have the conversation and they've got it, but they haven't, you know, gone beyond that. And you'll see with most organizations, and I say this a lot, is that they look up to the hill, but they never look over the horizon on what's on the other side. And I think that is something that they need to have a clear picture and go, okay, this is what we need, or we would like to achieve from this meeting. Another thing I want to bring up with yourself is that, you know, you talk about face facts, your book, and it's the ancient art of Chinese face reading. And you mentioned two of them there, you know, the blinking of the eyes or the tonality as well. What other sort of signs should somebody be looking for as well? I was thinking something funny, but I won't say it on air. What's the other signs that someone should be looking for as well on it?
Yeah, there's lots of great examples on YouTube of, I watch a lot of interviews on YouTube, and there's so many of them are so revealing. There's the famous one of Lance Armstrong, where he's being interviewed by Oprah, where he's making his so-called confession, and he does a lot of chewing his lower lip. And when you see somebody chewing their lower lip or kind of sucking their lower lip in, it tells you they may be speaking, but they're speaking very reluctantly, and they're telling you something they really don't want to say. And they're feeling very stressed about it. You'll see obvious things like, if a guy is uncomfortable, he'll often have his hands resting over his genitals, or a woman the same. Women will often touch this area just at the base of the throat, the bone here at the top of the sternum called the suprasternal notch. Women in particular will often start touching that or just stroking it, because it's a way to pacify themselves and relax. Men will often touch their jewelry. They have a ring on their finger, and they will often start kind of stroking the ring. And again, it's to pacify themselves. There are a couple of very obvious signs.
Pacify themselves. Why?
Because they're feeling nervous. They're feeling anxious. They're feeling under pressure for whatever is going on at that time.
Yeah. Okay. So it's, you know, rolling. I'm just thinking about it. When I roll my wedding ring, I'm actually thinking.
Yeah.
So which then I rolled it and I lost. So I haven't got one now. So, but yeah, the other things as well, we know with body language, you know, rubbing of the chin, which is obvious, or, you know, the hands behind the back and everything as well. They're different displays. Or is there, with the world that we have and the world that we're growing up in, and I say growing up in, which is moving very fast, is there two sets, one that you need to look out for men and one that you need to look out for women, or do they intertwine in each other?
Yeah, there's a lot of intertwining. There's definitely a lot of intertwining. And then you can broaden it out to the cultural and intercultural differences. Like, for example, my partner's Chinese. And in the West, if we saw a woman putting her hand up to her face and apparently laughing behind it, we would think, oh, she's having a great time. But if you see a Chinese woman or a Japanese woman doing it, they're embarrassed. So there's all sorts of cultural differences in terms of body language. But there's a lot that we have in common. But like I said, women will often touch that area, the suprasternal notch at the base of the throat, in particular, much more than men will. Men will tend to rub their jewelry more than women. Women, if they have longer hair, will often stroke their hair. Again, it's pacifying themselves. Where obviously I don't have hair, so I can't do that. But men will often, you know, stroke their chin. So there's a few things that one gender is more likely to do than another. But one of the things I particularly recommend is, before a negotiation, if you can hang out with the person, even if it's for 10 minutes, and just get coffee or tea together or something like that, and just observe how they are when there's nothing at stake, when there's no pressure, whatever. Just watch what seems to be normal for them in terms of their body language, in terms of their tonality, the rhythm of speech, their gestures, how they stand. All of those things will tell you a lot. So when you see any kind of significant changes during the negotiation, it tells you there's either a hot spot, or you've touched a nerve somewhere, or they're under stress or uncomfortable for some reason. So you need to pay particular attention to what aspect of the negotiation is happening at that moment.
It's all about building rapport as well.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, that the more rapport that you have with that person, which builds trust, will help in the negotiations as well. So it's not there's a long research development that needs to be put, protocol that needs to be put in place beforehand, during, and then after as well. Talk to me about decision making. A lot of people seem to have, are quite indecisive.
Yeah.
So, what sort of advice would you give people or, C-suite executives that, would like to be able to make faster and quicker decisions?
Yeah, it depends on the personality as well. So if I'm working with an individual client, I will do a profile of them. I will profile them in detail. That's part of the deal. So I will tell them a lot about how they really come across. There's how they may wish to come across. There's how they may think they come across. And then there's how they come across, how they're perceived by other people. So I will go into that in some detail, and I will be very real with them. So I will leave them under no illusion about this is your style. This is how you're perceived. And if you want, you're getting X result, but if you want a different result, then you need to adapt in particular ways. And some people, again, the fact that somebody's in a position of authority, a business leader, CEO, CFO, whatever term you care to use, whatever title they have, it doesn't mean they're confident. It doesn't mean they're self-aware. It doesn't mean they have great communication skills. It doesn't mean any of those things. They've just risen to that position for whatever reason. So I will go into great detail with them about, again, how they're perceived and all of that. I will talk to them about, okay, what is it you actually want to achieve? If you want to be seen consistently as being decisive, then you're going to have to change X and Y in your behavior style. You're going to have to change aspects of how you communicate, how you present yourself, not just in terms of how you speak, but how you present yourself in terms of your body language. Like I've seen, for example, I was asked to profile somebody there a few months ago, and he's the head of an international business network. And one of the franchisees was they were looking to renegotiate the contract. So I was asked to review this person, and I looked at a number of photos. There were a number of things very apparent about him, but I also found a number of video clips. And when I watched them, it was blatantly obvious that the guy is socially very insecure, but he's in a position of eminence and authority. So I would, in the case of somebody like that, I would have to talk to them about, okay, you see yourself as this, but you're seen as that. And if you're going to bridge the gap, you're going to have to change. And this is how you're going to have to change it. But it depends on the individual, what the precise steps are. But they have to be willing to listen, and they have to be willing to adapt. And if they're not willing to adapt, then they're going to have problems, because their ability to project authority is going to diminish. And they're not a long-term prospect for that position.
Practice.
Yeah.
Practice. I think that's practice makes perfect, but it does.
Perfect practice makes perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to, it's work on it every week. You have to get help with yourself, or like for me to even help my speaking abilities as Toastmasters. But it is definitely about the communication and the language as well. Question I have for you, what have you got wrong to get right yourself when it comes to negotiation and developing your business?
Yeah, I've made so many mistakes over the years, Joe. And that's one of the things, one of the things I find with people, and I'll answer the question directly in a moment. One of the things I find with people is they get stuck on what they didn't get right or what they did wrong. And they carry it around like a massive great weight. And that impacts then on how they're perceived, because so much of how we're perceived by others is actually unconscious at an unconscious level. Like our state, when we meet somebody, we're communicating unconsciously. There's what's called a mirror neuron effect. So if I meet you and I'm in a really happy state, that triggers a response in you, whether you're aware of it or not. But if I'm in a really angry state, that triggers a very different response in you. And so if we're carrying the dead weight of the past and the so-called mistakes, we're projecting that forward without saying a single word. So that's been one of the biggest challenges of my life, because I've made a lot of mistakes, to let that go and just say, okay, it happened. It's done. It's not happening right now. So I just move forward. So a number of things come very much to mind. I've made the mistake of taking a lot of things for granted, particularly when things were going well. I just assumed things were going to continue to go well, things were going to build on that. And I became, I guess, complacent. So complacency has been one of my big mistakes. Not following through. So when things were going successfully, I didn't always take the next step up. Okay, what do I need to develop from here? And and I've done it so often, and as humans, we do it. We get caught in our so-called comfort zones where we're not really growing. We're actually stagnating and people pass us out. So I've made that mistake on repeated occasions. And it's the Steve Jobs quote, stay hungry, stay foolish. And there's a lot of wisdom in that. And you, no matter what level of success you achieve, you have to find a way to stay hungry. So another mistake I made was not having the right mentors, or alternatively, even when I had the right mentors, not always listening, thinking I knew better. And when we allow ourselves, when we get out of the way and just stay humble and have the right mentors who will point things out to us and be very real with us, then we really grow. We say, oh, it's not this crap that happened. It's an opportunity to develop from here. And we have to, it's the perspective really that counts.
The words that are popping up is letting go.
Yeah.
And that comes with age as well. There's one of the things, it's about all that hard work, and when you get something from, you know, your hard work, people have a tendency to take the foot off the gas and take a break because it took so much effort to get that. But what they should do is find that inner strength, that when they get that win, to keep pushing ahead and not take the foot off the gas, because as that builds off, then it gets easier and easier as well.
Yeah, like the Navy SEALs philosophy, that there's no matter how wiped out, tired, exhausted you feel, there's usually at least another 20% in the tank.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've learned that from having small children. You know, when kids will create fatigue, you'll run on empty, but you find that inner strength to just get up in the middle of the night and look after them or whatever it may be. And that's how, what I realize is that we all have that extra little spark, our little bit of energy that sometimes we don't realize we have, and you have to just keep pushing forward on it. Joe, what book would you recommend for people to have a read?
In terms of negotiation, there's two I particularly recommend. There's the one that's most well known is Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, but the other one I particularly like is The Art of Negotiation by Michael Wheeler. Michael Wheeler is a Harvard professor, and I just love his style. Because one of the things he talks about in that book is seeing negotiation as a jazz performance. Now, I'm a jazz fan, but when you think in terms of jazz musicians, they're highly skilled at their instrument, but they know how to improvise. So when things go apparently wrong, there's a lovely story told by Herbie Hancock when he was playing keyboards with Miles Davis. And Miles was notorious for being like a very strict group leader. And they were playing a gig one night, and Hancock played some notes, and they were just wrong. And he knew they were wrong. And he lost the melody completely. And he expected Miles to give him one of his famous glares. And instead, Miles just followed on from those wrong notes and turned them into something else. And it was a beautiful, beautiful example of being able to improvise, because when a negotiation starts, you have your plan, you have your strategy, but if you can't adapt, you're going to lose somewhere along the way.
Yeah, and the other thing as well, get a good night rest
helps
before that.
If the kids allow you.
If the kids allow you, Arnold. You've mentioned a couple of quotes there, and, you know, we had Chris Voss on the show here a while back as well. So, you know, what is the best piece of, not business, but the best piece of advice that you've ever got that you've sort of fall back on from time to time?
Yeah, there's probably a number. There's one from my father. That's a piece of life advice that we're here to serve. And it took me a long time to really get that. That we're here to be of service. And that doesn't mean being a doormat.
Yeah.
It means being discerning, knowing who we're working with, who we're looking to help, how we're looking to help them. And it doesn't mean people are necessarily going to want to help or to appreciate it. But if they do or they don't, we carry on regardless. And the next bit then is to not take life personally. Yeah. Life is not personal. Life is just life.
As someone said to me, life is a shit show with wonderful sparks of happiness in between. That makes a lot of sense. Joseph, if someone wants to reach out with you, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Best way to reach me is LinkedIn. I'm more active on LinkedIn than anywhere else. So you get me there, Joseph McGuire, Face Magic, LinkedIn.
Perfect. Joseph McGuire from Clearside Communications, and you have the book as well, which is Face Facts. Thanks for coming on the show.